Great. Well, I want to tell you a story. On Christmas Eve, Kate and I decided we would watch a contemporary Christmas movie. You know, kind of chill out, relax, have a beer. Kate doesn't drink beer, but anyway. So Kate researched a bit on the best current movies, and then we sat down, turned on the Netflix, and started watching one that apparently got good reviews. It was an animation called Arthur Christmas. I should mention, before I go on, we have a 15-minute rule, meaning that if either of us can call for a veto of what we're watching after the 15 minutes, right? We kind of check in. Is this worth more of our life? Or should we stop while we're only 15 minutes in? I highly recommend this, by the way. So the first 15 minutes of Arthur Christmas was like watching a Star Wars fight sequence. Rather strange. At any rate, it didn't get us into the holiday spirit. So we nixed it and went on to another possibility. Next, we tried Jingle Jangle. But that too, we ended up vetoing, as we couldn't get past what seemed to be kind of wooden dialogue and the excessive reliance on kind of visual effects. But maybe you liked both of those. Maybe you've seen those. And maybe Kate and I had a little bit of the Grinch in us that night. We weren't just up for those kind of holiday movies. So we gave up on Christmas movies at that point. Because we have seen, you know, and as you have, I'm sure, some very powerful and wonderful Christmas movies. And one of my favorite Christmas movies is one based on A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. And it's the 1951 version with Alistair Sim. It's the best, I think, so far. Now, I think I've talked about A Christmas Carol before in a Dharma talk a couple of years ago. A Christmas Carol was first published in 1843, and it was an immediate hit, a bestseller. I was reading somewhere, I think they started, it was published on like December, I forget what, 10th or something like that, and by Christmas Eve it was completely sold out. And within a very short time had gone through like 44 editions. It was a very big hit. And I appreciated reading Christmas Carol when I was very young. And over the years, I've read it, I think, maybe four or five times. And I still appreciate it. Although, from a different perspective, I think each time that I read it, it is a classical tale of spiritual transformation, or as Kate suggested to me yesterday, a kind of tale of redemption. And that's true. You know, I think it is spiritual transformation or spiritual redemption. But it's also a story of profound forgiveness, particularly self-forgiveness, which I think is maybe the most challenging kind of forgiveness for most of us. I was thinking about this, and I don't really have a clear and succinct definition of what it means to forgive or what forgiveness may be. Perhaps it's a bit different for all of us. But from my own experience, I would say that true forgiveness involves a deep seeing, a deep acceptance, and mercy. Henry Nguyen was a Dutch priest and a very prolific writer. And I've read some of his works, and I'm very moved by him. During the last years of his life, he came to live and work with individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities at L'Arche. L'Arche Daybreak, I think it was the community he was connected with in Ontario. L'Arche are communities where people with physical and intellectual disabilities live together with people who live with them, not as helpers, but simply as people who share the life with them. Anyway, that experience really shaped much of his thought and his writing. And this is what he wrote about forgiveness. He wrote, "Forgiveness is the name of love practiced among people who love poorly. The hard truth is that all of us love poorly. We need to forgive and be forgiven every day, every hour, unceasingly. That is the great work of love among the fellowship of the weak that is the human family." In the Christmas Carol, as I'm sure all of you know, you've maybe read it or at least seen one of the movie versions, Ebenezer Scrooge comes to see deeply his own nature, his poor ability to love, not only others, but to love himself. And he comes in the end to forgive himself. And in doing so, Scrooge becomes free of his own kind of inner violence that is there when we are unable or unwilling to forgive, whether it's to forgive ourselves or to forgive others. The last time that I read A Christmas Carol, which was a couple of years ago, I wondered if Dickens was possibly influenced by popular notions of Buddhism that were circulating quite widely in English society at that time. In the 1800s, this was a time when Buddhist texts were being translated from Pali, from Sanskrit, and also from Chinese. And they were translated into various European languages, particularly German and French, but also English. And there were a couple of kind of basic, rudimentary introductions to Buddhism that were available at that time. So was Dickens a closet Buddhist? Was he perhaps influenced by writings that he read about the Buddhist tradition? I'm not sure. Now, I'm sure most of you know the story, at least remember bits of it, but maybe not all. So I'd like to remind you a little bit of the story as I go on with this talk. So the story begins on a cold and bleak Christmas Eve in London, 7 years after the death of Ebenezer Scrooge's business partner, Jacob Marley. And Scrooge is a London-based moneylender, described in the story by Dickens as, and I'm quoting here, "a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner." He also hates Christmas and refuses an invitation to Christmas dinner from his nephew. He turns away early in the story from two people who seek a donation from him in order to provide food and heating for the poor, and only very grudgingly allows his overworked and underpaid clerk, Bob Cratchit, allows him Christmas Day off, without pay, in order, because it's simply the social custom. So the story, I think, particularly in the beginning, describes Scrooge as deeply caught in the three poisons of greed, of course, but also hate and also ignorance of his own condition. So Christmas Eve, right? At home that night, Scrooge is visited by the spirit of his old and very dead business partner, Jacob Marley, who wanders the earth, entangled by heavy chains forged by a lifetime of greed and self-centeredness. Marley is a hungry ghost. One of those beings in the Buddhist cycle of existence who have profoundly deep cravings that can never be satisfied. "You are fettered," said Scrooge, trembling when he saw Bob Marley. "Tell me why." "I wear the chain I forged in life," replies the ghost, Marley. "I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will. And of my own free will I wore it. Is this pattern strange to you?" Scrooge trembled more and more. "Or would you know," pursued the ghost, "the weight and length of the strong coil you yourself bear? It was full as heavy and as long as this, 7 Christmases ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain." So as you probably picked up here, Marley is describing to Scrooge the workings of karma. He asks Scrooge, "Is this pattern strange to you?" Now the Buddhist tradition understands karma as the kind of consequences that's based on our intentions. That both the willful actions we do and the unexamined pattern of thought that underpins our actions influence, those things influence the direction of our life, creating kind of grooves perhaps in our personality that cause us to react habitually. And if we're not observant of those patterns of thought, we're likely to repeat the kinds of actions we have performed in the past over and over again. And Marley makes this really clear to Scrooge in the following little bit of dialogue. "But you were always a good man of business, Jacob," faltered Scrooge, who now began to apply this to himself. "Business," cried the ghost, wringing his hands again. "Mankind was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The deals of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business." So then the plot thickens. Then Marley tells Scrooge that he has one chance to avoid the fate of becoming a hungry ghost. Scrooge will be visited by 3 spirits, and he must listen to them or be cursed to carry his own karmic chains, which will be much heavier than Marley's own because he's added on 7 more years. "Jacob," Scrooge said imploringly. "Old Jacob Marley, tell me more. Speak comfort to me, Jacob." But his old business partner replies, "I have none to give." So often when we are confronted with fear, or delusionment, and feelings of groundlessness, We usually turn away, right? And we seek comfort. And yet, as we all know, it becomes harder and harder to find any lasting comfort. And eventually, we realize that true comfort can only be found in facing the very dilemmas and pain of our life. Scrooge, like all of us, must face his life and make his spiritual journey and transformation on his own. And clearly, as the example of Jacob Marley presents in the story, death is no escape. Right? Just become a hungry ghost carrying heavy chains. So Scrooge must become intimate with his life, both with his confusion about it and intimate with the truth of it. So Marley says Scrooge will be visited by three spirits, or we might say three bodhisattvas, who will show him his life, and Scrooge must attend fully, for only in that way can he find freedom from his karmic chains. Without these visits, Marley declares, you cannot hope to shun the path that I tread. So like Scrooge, you know, most of us struggle to avoid being present with our pain and our suffering. The old hurtful stories of our past, for example, can be so difficult to bear. And maybe we skip the large family gathering if, you know, Uncle Peter is going to be there, or a particularly difficult brother or sister that we have an ongoing argument with. Or maybe we simply eat and drink our way through painful memories. Or maybe we become cynical and hard like Scrooge. But on that fateful Christmas Eve, Jacob Marley did not let Scrooge turn away from being present with his own life. Marley does not offer distraction when Scrooge needs the medicine of presence. So, Scrooge's journey begins with the help of three bodhisattvas. The first is known as the Bodhisattva of Christmas Past. This bodhisattva aids Scrooge in seeing his original loving nature, expressed in a time when, as a youth, Scrooge was joyful, innocent, loving, and loved. The Bodhisattva of Christmas Past reminds Scrooge of the love he shared with his sister and his first employer, and a young woman. But this same Bodhisattva also reminds Scrooge of the loneliness of his boyhood and his growing delusion and greed as he became a young man. So Scrooge, now a very bitter old bachelor, sees how his greed for money cost him the love of his life and the possibility of a warm and caring family. Scrooge sees how these experiences that he had as a young person, how these experiences have shaped the present condition of his life. Acknowledging his suffering really is essential to Scrooge's transformation, for it opens his frozen heart to forgiveness, which then will make possible a true connection to others. In the midst of the various difficult stories of his life that he sees through this bodhisattva's, Scrooge stops turning away and is willing to be with his vulnerability. He sees that he too is a flawed human being, like Henry Nguyen described. So next, Scrooge is visited by the Bodhisattva of Christmas Present. And this Bodhisattva takes Scrooge to a food market of happy people, buying the makings of Christmas dinner, and then takes Scrooge to the Christmas celebrations of happening in a miner's cottage, and then in a lighthouse. And next, Scrooge is taken to visit his nephew Fred's Christmas party, a very warm and very happy affair. And these are scenes of joy and pleasantness that are also a part of life, but qualities that Scrooge denied himself with his focus on his bottomless greed and his self-centeredness. So finally, Scrooge is taken to the Christmas feast of Bob Cratchit, his employee. And the family is very poor, but also very content and full of enjoyment with each other's company. And there Scrooge is shown Bob Cratchit's youngest son, Tiny Tim, who is seriously ill. The Bodhisattva informs Scrooge that Tiny Tim will die soon unless the course of events changes. Seeing the suffering of others, clearly for the first time in a very long time, Scrooge lets go, at least somewhat, of his stories of personal neediness, and as a very independent being in an unconnected world. He begins to open up to the truth of interbeing. And there's yet one more lesson that Christmas present teaches Scrooge. Under his giant robe, the Bodhisattva of Christmas present presents or reveals to Scrooge what Dickens calls the banes of man: ignorance and want, as Dickens calls them, which are, of course, two of the three poisons, right? These represent how Scrooge has lived his life, a life of ignorance, a lack of self-awareness, and a lack of compassion for others. And through, of course, his endless want, craving, possessing, that has no end. The third Bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva of Christmas yet to come, shows Scrooge a Christmas day in the future. The Bodhisattva shows him scenes involving the death of a disliked man. The man's funeral will only be attended by local businessmen if lunch is provided. When Scrooge asks the ghost to show one who feels any emotion over this man's death, the ghost can show him the pleasure of a poor couple who were in debt to the man, and they're rejoicing that his death gives them more time to put their finances in order. Scrooge then asks to see some tenderness connected with any death, and the ghost then shows him Bob Cratchit and his family mourning the passing of their son, a Tiny Tim. The ghost then shows Scrooge the man's neglected grave, whose tombstone bears, of course, Scrooge's own name. Sobbing, Scrooge begs the ghost of Christmas future to give him another chance to change his ways and thus change the course of his life. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The Bodhisattvas of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. In this moment of redemption, it seems to me that Scrooge acknowledges the cramped and twisted life that is his. And he lets go of a stark hardness within his spirit. He forgives, but of course not forgets. Indeed, he promises not to forget. I live in the past, the present, and the future. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. And so it's in this way that Scrooge carries forward a redemption that will also touch the lives of others. In this moment of redemption, he also, of course, forgives himself. It's the only way he can go forward, isn't it? The Vipassana teacher, Sharon Salzberg, wrote this about forgiveness. In some ways, to be able to forgive, to let go, is a type of dying. It is the ability to say, I am not that person anymore, and you are not that person anymore. Forgiveness allows us to recapture some part of ourselves that we left behind in bondage to a past event. Some part of our identity may also need to die. And in that letting go, we can reclaim the energy that was bound up in the past. So I won't tell you the end of Dickens' tale, just in case you want to read it or watch it again yourself. In the way that the story of Scrooge's life became a Dharma gate for him, so our own life stories, I think, can become Dharma gates for us. Like Scrooge, we begin by simply being present, entering into the very cauldron of our heart. What part of us have we sold off instead of investing in wisdom and compassion, insight and forgiveness? Can we let go of blaming stories? Can we open to forgiveness for ourselves? Can we open to forgiving others? This story of Ebenezer Scrooge has so much more to say, of course, than what I have briefly kind of put forward in this talk. But I think part of it is the acknowledgement of radical presence and forgiveness. A story I hope that will encourage all of us to enter into a radical presence and to take up, as best we can, forgiveness. Forgiveness is the name of love practiced among people who love poorly. The hard truth is that all of us love poorly. We need to forgive and be forgiven every day, every hour, unceasingly. That is the great work of love among the fellowship of the weak. That is the human family. Well, thank you for listening. So good to see your faces again. And for those of you who have heard me give some other version of this talk in the past years, thank you for your patience. And I hope at some point, if you haven't read A Christmas Carol, you will. You can download it for free now, right? And it is a very interesting book to read, I think. Thank you.